Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. If you know anything about Boy Scouts, you would likely recognize its motto, Be Prepared. Our stories this week are about being prepared. The provincial government, health officials, and others acknowledged the beginning of the second wave earlier this week. Forecast models are showing a doubling of new cases every 10 to 12 days. They are predicting we could hit 1,000 new cases a day in the near future. The hospital is a hive of activity. There were more than 14,000 COVID tests done at the hospital over the past 6 months. New doctors and nurses are being hired, and strategic planning is taking place. So how ready are we? I will ask the CEO that question and more. I'm so pleased to have with me today Linda Davis, CEO of Northumberland Hills Hospital. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you, Rob. It's great for me to be here again.
There's a lot going on in the past few weeks at the hospital, especially in the last couple of days in relation to the pandemic. But before we get to that, I'd like to take us back a bit because I feel there's been a lot of moving parts and I believe they all fit together. So could we just step back for a moment and talk about Northumberland Hills receiving some provincial money recently? This time it was for upgrades and repairs. I believe you received something around the $263,000 mark. What was this for?
It's actually a fund that we apply to every year. It's called Hospital Infrastructure Renewal Fund, better known as HERF. And it is really, we make application and then depending on the resources that are available from the ministry as well as the needs across all hospital sector is the amount that we receive. So the $263,700 and some odd that we received is actually going to be dedicated towards supporting some changes within our medical device reprocessing department. And again, just improving our workflow in there and making some physical changes to it to help improve that. So that was earmarked. We actually applied for far, far more, but we're only allocated this amount, but we're grateful for that.
I know the last time we spoke, you were also taking on some renovations. This is different from those other renovations that we talked about the last time?
Yes, they are. They are renovations actually that we've known that we needed to do. We thought we would be able to get some additional funding from HERF, so that was where we had targeted it. The other renovations are not really moving forward quickly because of COVID. We have been diverted. And we do hope, though, to be able to make these changes within our medical reprocessing, hopefully before wave two or else immediately after.
Now, for those of us who are just lay people and don't know what a medical reprocessing area is, what goes on there?
Well, if you've ever had surgery, you know that instruments are used in order to have the surgery, and those instruments need to be re-sterilized. Some of our equipment is disposable, but much of it is reusable and we sterilize it. There are very, very stringent processes throughout that whole process. And we have equipment that is checked daily, sometimes three times daily, lots of processes. But there also is the physical environment that we need to make sure is. And ours has a need for some changes so that the workflow happens more efficiently within that area. But it's a very critical part of our organization. We want to be as efficient as we can and support our staff in their workflow.
During the past 6 months, it's been hard at times to keep on top of everything that's been going on at the hospital. But I understand recently there were some changes to the assessment center and where people can go to get tests for COVID. Could you maybe elaborate upon what's changed?
Sure. When we started, I mean, March 11th, when the pandemic was declared, we knew we needed to provide an assessment center. So we took our ambulatory care area, which normally would see people coming for doctor's appointments on a, you know, on a day basis when we might have a pediatrician down or another surgeon. Those appointments would be held in our ambulatory care area. And that was the most appropriate area at that point in time for us to take over and use as our assessment center. So that's in fact where we housed the assessment center throughout the months of March, April, and May. And then in June, we thought, well, you know, maybe we can move it because we really wanted to begin to offer up some of our ambulatory care procedures again. So we moved it within our emergency department, an area that had been actually leased to one of our internal medicine specialists who moved. And so we've moved it into the emergency department area. And that occurred during our summer months. I think it's been there now for at least a month. So it probably moved sometime in August. But I think, or even in July, I can't remember the exact date. But it is, it's still within the hospital. And it is, obviously, you come in through the emergency doors and then you're directed immediately. Actually, we've changed it now. There's a side door and there is a sign as you approach to show where the entrance is to the assessment center.
But I also understand, though, that it's gone from a system that is appointment only. And I noticed that in the press release. Can you talk a bit about what that change means and why it's different and how it's going to affect people who wish to get tested?
Certainly. I think that when we first opened the assessment center and throughout the months, the last 6 months, our volumes up until about the past 2 weeks were quite manageable within a day for us to be able to get anyone who walked in. Our numbers might be 50, 75 people a day, and we could certainly do that quite regularly, just waiting for people to arrive. And if you had an appointment, we always took appointments, and if you had an appointment, you could be guaranteed your time. You'd be in and out, usually in 15 minutes. So we recommended appointments, but we also took walk-ins. What has happened with the increase in volume? We could not predict that we would be able to see people. We ended up having lineups, and we wanted to be able to be far more conscious of people's time, and so have gone to appointments so that we can in fact see people within the time limit. And if anyone is needing the test very quickly, if they happen to be feeling unwell, we prioritize those people and make sure they get an appointment that same day.
Now, there appears to be a move away from testing people who are asymptomatic. In other words, they are carrying the virus, but they haven't shown any signs of being ill. And I saw in the press release that the hospital saying that now that they're going to be doing tests for people who are only showing COVID symptoms or have been exposed to a confirmed case or a few other restrictions. Now, why is this happening?
I think it's, Rob, because of the volume of individuals who are seeking tests. And I think it's just a matter of being able to recognize that we have to prioritize at some point in time those people. It's not to say that those people who may not fit into those criteria may not be able to have a test. They are. I believe the pharmacies that are opening up are able to. And certainly if there is space within our own, we would. But we have been asked to try to prioritize those individuals who are symptomatic. Or are forming one of those other groups, perhaps work in an area that may have an outbreak or be in an area where they've been told they must have one in order to return to work or to see a loved one in long-term care. So those individuals are still certainly being seen and seen by appointment, but it's really for those individuals that we sometimes call them the walking worried. And it's just a matter of saying, well, gee, maybe I'll get tested. Those people we need to really prioritize, make sure that we're getting the individuals who really do need to have the test as quickly as possible.
But at the same time, we hear about experts and other officials saying we need to be testing as many people as possible. And there are many officials who say that there should be more testing, not less. Why aren't we doing more?
I think it's just a matter of the system being able to manage the numbers at this point, Rob. I'm not sure that we want to change the philosophy of not testing. I think that I'm certainly hearing from the ministry that we want to continue to test. I think it's really to prioritize, just because I think if you've seen on the news, the lineups are very long. And so it's really to make sure that those individuals who really do need to be tested are getting tested, but then certainly hopefully being able to accommodate those others.
Are there any plans to go beyond just the hospital and the local pharmacies?
Yeah, I think that certainly we understand that there are pharmacies that are opening up. I don't believe any of our local ones have yet done that. But I think that we are working with the Ontario Health Team of Northumberland to talk about how else we can support our community, whether that is in community-based testing centers, whether that is in what we call pop-up testing centers to the paramedics in rural areas. And looking to obviously expand times within Trent Hills or here as well at NHH if that in fact is needed.
So it sounds to me though you're saying if it's needed, is it not needed right now? I'm seeming a little confused about that.
Well, I think I think what we are seeing in our testing center is we're seeing people coming from many, many different areas. And they were coming because of their ability to be a walk-in. So I think that absolutely, I think we want to be able to test those people who are considered, quote, a priority. But I think in terms of if those priorities grow, if we see the rate of incidence within our community rise, then we would want to be able to test those individuals or also test their contacts. So we may see that need rise just because the rate of incidence rises within our community.
That's interesting. How many people were coming from elsewhere to get tested here? Do you have any idea?
I can't tell you the exact numbers, Rob, but I know that we were getting people travel from Kingston, from Oshawa, certainly, because we were taking walk-ins, and they were certainly prepared to try to come and wait.
The modeling from the Ontario government seems to be suggesting that we're seeing a doubling of the number of new cases every 10 to 12 days. And there's even been some suggestion that we could see as many as 1,000 new cases a day. Is it not prudent to start to put pieces in place now to prepare for this?
Absolutely. No, and as I said, we are making plans. Those plans will hopefully be able to be released fairly quickly in relationship to what we will do to support our community. And when I say we, I mean the Ontario Health Team, including community paramedics, including the family health teams, the CHC, to really provide greater options for testing, as well as flu clinics. I think that's the other piece that we have to be aware of. It is, flu season is coming. We know that the flu vaccine will likely be available shortly. We want to ensure that people have adequate access to flu vaccines. And so again, the plan includes flu clinics as well as testing. And it really is a matter of just sort of evolving as I said, as the need appears or is growing, we will have the plan ready to put into play.
Well, there does seem to be a sense that the system is bracing for the second wave. And I saw a joint message from both CEOs of the Northumberland County Hills Hospitals, Coburg and Campbellford. Why was that necessary?
I think that, Rob, it's, first of all, I have to commend the individuals in Northumberland County for the very, very vast majority of individuals that I witness. They're wearing masks within physical or doing physical distancing, wearing masks in enclosed spaces, and really managing those kinds of measures. So we have been very fortunate. I think, though, it's also a sense, and even within my own family, it's, well, isn't this over yet? It must be, why do we have to continue to do this? So I think it's that psychological fatigue of needing or thinking and bracing ourselves for another round of this. And so it was felt to be important that we relay that message, because this is just when we don't want to let our guard down. We want to be as vigilant as we were at the very beginning. And it's just a little harder when we've been through 6 months of it. So we felt it was important to be able to reiterate those very, very basic principles that have stood us in good stead through wave one as we prepare for wave two.
A lot of people have talked about how well we've done in Northumberland, that the numbers haven't been horrific like they have been in some of the hot spots where you see literally hundreds of cases every day. But at the same time, this becoming lax and people sort of losing their focus. What do you think is contributing to that?
Yeah. I think that we have been aware that we would, I'm certainly hopeful that we will not have to go back to total lockdown, just as I think we've heard the ministry say they do not wish to have businesses go back into total lockdown. And I think those measures will be taken very seriously if they should come. Our plan does include a very gradual reduction of the types of services, just as when we did a total lockdown at the beginning, and then we gradually reopened. We would retrace those steps in terms of gradually bringing it back down again, if it's needed, and each step being implicated by the number of incidents or the increase of incidents within our community. I think some of the, perhaps, just because we've had such low numbers, may be a reason why people may feel, well, it's really not here. Why should we worry? You know, why, you know, whatever. And I think that's where it was again needed to reiterate that message. We may not have it here now, but it can happen so very, very quickly. And we do know that people are moving. You know, we are not in lockdown, so people are moving about in our province. And we are having some social circles or bubbles and those sorts of things. So we just need to continue to be cautious and not let our guard down.
Well, I guess that was something too, because I wonder when we look at the situation and you take a place like Toronto where they're starting to clamp down more, people then just, well, I can't do X, Y, or Z here. I'm going to go down to Northumberland, or let's go to go to Coburg and visit our family there because, you know, they have fewer regulations or fewer restrictions. How do you think about those kinds of things? And are there any concerns associated with that?
Obviously, it's very difficult to control others. So I think we always need to look back and say we need to control our own behavior. And so again, just being very vigilant when what we're doing or where we're interfacing within our community. If we are going out, we're being cognizant of that. We're wearing our masks. We are hand sanitizing, all of those things, so that if there are individuals coming into our community, we are certainly not, hopefully not putting ourselves in that risk. So I think we can always work to protect ourselves, regardless of who might come into our community.
There still seems to be people who are not engaging in preventative behavior. I mean, there's still examples of people not wearing masks, not maintaining social bubbles and other rules and regulations. What is it going to take to move these individuals, do you think?
I think that's a difficult question, Rob. I think everyone has a right to their own values. I think it's, from my perspective, it's a matter of trying not to put others at risk. I am quite comfortable if people like to take a risk. I just don't want them to put me at risk. So, but I also understand that they have a right to their own beliefs. So I really don't know what it will take. I think that we at the hospital have continued to be very consistent in our message that a mask is required. There's always discussions with anyone coming for a test or for surgery ahead of time, so that we know and that they know they would be required to wear a mask. And we try to work out alternatives if it is really an issue for the individual. But our rule is we need to protect our staff and other patients who may be vulnerable for anyone coming in. So we're trying to do our part within the hospital, and I hope others will do theirs.
We mentioned this a little bit earlier, but in the last couple of days, there's been some forecasting and projections about the numbers and the extent to which the second wave is going to impact on the province. When you look at models, do you look at models for our area or do you look at models for the province?
I think that with the information that we get on modeling comes as Ontario. It's not broken down specifically into sectors. I think what we do though, is we watch carefully the various areas of the province. And I have just in front of me, and I'll hold it up so potentially you can see it. This is our own internal scorecard that we look at in relationship, and we will be looking at the incidents in Ontario, in Durham Region, Clarington, Peterborough, Haliburton, Kawartha, Pine Ridge, and then Northumberland County. So we are cognizant of what's going on in the areas closest to us, as well as the province. The modeling only comes down as Ontario, but we work to make sure that we're watching the areas around us and what might be the incidences there.
Are you able to project forward, or is it just simply you're tracking what's happening in real time?
This is tracking. I think the Ontario Health Modeling has projections. And I think you and I both had that most recent information about, you know, that the peak could rise to 1,000 cases a day. I think that modeling is being done and it's being based on projections, obviously, based on what's happening in other countries in Europe as well as in the U.S. So some other modeling.
How accurate do you feel they are in representing what we could be heading towards?
It's interesting because it was interesting because the modeling that I saw talked about the spike beginning on September the 20th and running about 90 days right through till about December 20th. And I thought, boy, that's pretty real when I think of what's happened in the last week in terms of the increase of numbers, whether or not it will rise to that same level of modeling. Obviously, I have not looked at the math or the data behind it, but the experts are doing this. And I think that we probably feel it's credible. I feel it's credible and we need to take notice of it.
So how do you plan for something like this? What are you doing to get ready?
Well, very good question. And as I said, one of the things we are doing with the Ontario Health Team is looking at how do we support the whole community, whether that is, again, working with long-term care, with retirement homes, with Alderville First Nations, providing testing, supporting vulnerable populations. And internally, what we are developing a plan, as I said, to in fact reduce our services if it's needed, whether it might be needed because we are suddenly have fewer staff, because people may be ill or they have children who are ill and they need to remain home. So, or we have an increased incidence and an increased need. So we're really, and we need to pull people from one area to the other. So really looking at what services get reduced and sort of what is that plan to again bring down services in order to support the need relative to COVID.
I know when the lockdown first happened, there were basic issues like getting personal protective equipment and enough ventilators. And there was a lot of questions about just fundamental stuff that was needed by the hospital. What's the state currently in terms of supply and are you prepared for the kinds of numbers that could happen?
Again, another very good question, Rob. I think we are feeling much more confident. We've learned a lot through the first wave and we have set up a number of different mechanisms to be able to support supplies of personal protective equipment. And I think the whole province is probably far better equipped for that. The hospital itself has obtained a number of other pieces of equipment, something that's called a PAPR, which is an apparatus that someone would wear. There's a number of mechanisms and another pieces of equipment that we have obtained that will help support us, as well as just the regular flow. We have purchased things where we needed to as reusable isolation gowns, rather than depending upon the supply of disposables. We have purchased those gowns and have them in our circulation now. So feeling much more comfortable on the availability of PPE.
Now, what about staff? I mean, we don't talk a lot about the people that are involved, but the doctors, the nurses, right down to the cleaning staff and the most basic jobs, how would you say the staff is doing at this time, and are they ready?
Again, I think it's one of those pieces where we had this conversation probably a few weeks ago as a leadership team, and now are asking our leaders to have it with staff, because as things change, everyone again becomes slightly more worried. A large number of our staff have young children back at school, and that adds an additional burden. So I think what we have done is really identified that although we might have physical PPE, we have to be thinking about psychological PPE for our staff as well, and really saying, how are you feeling? Let's talk about it. It must be difficult with you and your child. Really letting them talk, speak about their concerns, and really voicing them, and obviously directing them to the resources that we have available, whether that's our employee assistance program or others. But I think it's helping to recognize that sense of emotion and helping them to verbalize it and talk about it. We also know that, as I said earlier, we've learned a lot. We've learned how we can cope and what we can do to help ourselves cope. So I think that we, with our plan, we feel prepared. Yes, it may be more than what we saw last time, but again, we were prepared for quite a big spike, which we didn't see. So I'm hopeful that with all the plans in place, that we will certainly be prepared.
What about additional staffing and replacement staff? Are there plans in place, and do we have the resources enough locally to make sure that no matter what happens, we're going to have enough doctors and nurses?
Well, we are hiring rapidly. I think we have seen very large orientation classes in the last month and a half, bringing on additional staff, hiring students, really looking to increase our staff quite a bit. Our primary care physicians are very prepared to step up. We've had conversations. I think that they recognize as well that there might be a draw on their resources, their need. And so I really believe that there's been lots of communication and collaboration.
How many people have you hired in the last little while?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I don't have the answer for that, Rob, but I can certainly get that from HR. I think I sat in an orientation class probably about 3 weeks ago that had 25. I think there's another 25. I don't know the exact number, but it certainly is quite a few.
Now, what's your greatest fear in preparing for the second wave?
Greatest fear. I had a greatest fear before in wave one, and I think that was really the ability to keep everyone moving in the same direction, communication coming from the Ministry of Health, and all of us working together. And I think it didn't materialize. We managed that very well. I think that we now have in place the various structures that will support, and I don't have that same fear. I guess it's always the fear of the unknown. We don't know. We don't know what we don't know at this point in time. So it's still there.
Linda Davis, I want to thank you so much for speaking to me today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.